The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. Well, good morning. Welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm your host, Margaret Friednauer, filling in for Deborah Schnabel today. Today on Your Guide to What's Important, we talk with Chilkat Valley News editor and publisher Tom Morfitt. Then we'll check in with Pam Randles of Talk Chinook Watershed Council about some young eagle scientists. And our talking topic today is the Haines FY15 budget, released just this week. We'll chat with Hainesboro Interim Manager Julie Causey, the main author of this year's draft budget, and Mayor Stephanie Scott to give us an introduction and overview of what this budget means for Haines residents and our community. That's all coming up next on Talk Around Town. Thanks for joining us. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Margaret. How are you?
Great. And let me beat you to it. It's a beautiful sunny morning.
And we've had so many beautiful sunny mornings in a row. I think it's really starting to, well, it's creating that Haines sunshine anxiety, which means if you get too many sunny days in
anxiety.
Winter, we'll only have so many in the summer. It's kind of based on the theory that there's only so many sunny days in a year. And if you use them all up in March, oh man, your July is really going to be nasty.
The Tom Morfitt theory of always making
a theory.
Always making a cloudy theory out of something sunny. Way to go, Tom.
No, people are that way. They're like, I better get outside because this might be all the sunshine we get for the rest of the year.
All right.
I think it's a Southeast Alaska phenomenon.
Oh, maybe.
Anyway.
Yes, what's new?
I just wanted to.
From your perspective in the world.
There's when I talk to Deborah, I'd like to start with a few things that are. Just kind of odd. And my two things today are that on yesterday morning, 30 people walked out to Pyramid Island.
Oh.
This is part of the museum's walk and talk. And you can walk out to the island, you know, at certain times in the spring when the tide is real low.
Mm-hmm.
But it just struck me, because I've lived in Haines now almost 30 years, that 30 years ago, that kind of thing didn't happen. And the people who were... And in that group yesterday were not young people. They were mostly people in their 60s, 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not something people did in the middle of the – or first thing in the morning was to all get together and walk out to the island in knee boots, which is a fairly rigorous hike. You got to go through some muddy parts and
– Some deep parts too,
deep parts.
I think. Yeah.
So it speaks to the changing demographic of the town.
Did you go?
I had to go to work. I took some pictures and ran back
to
my office.
You took some pictures.
But that – and then the other thing people were talking about this week was the smell downtown and around town.
Yeah,
And I once actually did a story on that smell for the Anchorage paper when I lived there, because they have – I think every town in Alaska has the same smell, which was explained to me by the state epidemiologist as kind of all that organic matter that gets covered over by snow getting uncovered in the spring. And it was particularly pungent this week. And my theory on that was that we got all of our snow in December. We got 9 feet of snow in December.
And we
got relatively little snow after that this winter. And so I think all of that organic matter, i.e. dog droppings, et cetera, got frozen in one generation.
Oh.
And that generation just became, you know, as the snow melts back.
That's
that generation.
That one layer.
We hit that one layer this week.
Oh, I noticed it yesterday, and it's just. But I'm glad somebody else told me the same thing. It has a lot to do with the not just Yeah. But grass and everything else. So I was glad to know it wasn't just one culprit. But,
the other thing is, this week in the actual news, of course, the borough budget's out. And I don't want to get too much into that because I know you're going to have the mayor and the interim manager on to talk about that. The highlights, of course, area-wide mill rate is going to go down a little bit. We've only had a couple days to kind of look at this thing. We haven't started pulling it apart, the budget document, yet. Some shifting of jobs. It looks a lot like Mark Ernest's budget from last year, and you can have a little bit more on that. I don't think we have the assessments. Have the assessments gone out yet?
No, I've been asking about them, but they still haven't. Yeah, they aren't here yet.
That was the hot topic this time last year, so I'll have to see where they roll in. The other big news, and this was not related to April Fools, was the railroad study. That was issued.
Thanks for the disclaimer.
and the state, of course, spent $100,000 to generate the study, and it's of obvious interest to Haines because it was a railroad out of Haines, and the projected price tags came in this week between $3.6 and $9 billion.
Yes, and that doesn't include a port facility
to
handle everything that would come in on the rail to ship it out.
Yeah. And but, you know, at the same time, the state is talking about $500 million road to Juneau. So, you know, this, I think it's Alaska. And you know, Alaskans think big. It was a young state. And that kind of comes with the territory. Also this week, three of the private port development group members in Haines, Dave Nanny, Bill Kurz, Dave Berry, and along with a Canadian gentleman, formed the Haines and Yukon Railway LLC. And they have a business license. And so there you go.
And their purpose is to advocate or push this idea
advocate for a railroad
further.
And I guess we must say that around 1910, around the time that the state put in the state railroad from Seward, Haines was an early candidate to be the terminus of the Alaska Railroad. The fact that the Haines route would have to go through Canada disqualified it from consideration as the state's railroad. And the grade, actually, from Haines up into the Yukon was preferable to the grade over in Skagway, the tremendous steepness of White Pass being an impediment. So this is not stuff that is completely out of the possible.
Right.
It's unlikely, I think, we'll see any of it in our lifetimes, but rail is a cheap way of moving things.
Right.
Compared to trucking. And there are literally, of course, tons of ore in the Yukon. The world's not getting smaller. We're continuing to use metals.
I mean, one of the fascinating things from that meeting, just real quick, was that crust ore deposit, which I'd heard just slight rumorings of, but I didn't know much information about it until this meeting, that it is considered the world's largest ore deposit, way up in northern Western Canada. Mm-hmm. And the reason it hasn't been developed is because, of course, it is difficult. They can't get the stuff out if they did mine it. But that was about the only option in this study that would be feasible. If Chevron wanted to develop their leases up there and they wanted to get the ore out, they may build a railroad.
And transportation being just in these discussions recently with Constantine and whatnot, that transportation is the key expense.
Right.
If you can cut down the cost of actually getting that stuff to smelters or where it needs to go, you can do it economically. So it's the kind of things we kind of think about here, and usually in the middle of winter, and then when we get our first 70-degree day in May, those kind of things
scatter in the sunny wind. Just think day to day once it's nice out.
The other big development this week, of course, was our lone superintendent finalist candidate.
Oh yes,
Mr. Van Brockhorst, Ted Van Brockhorst, backed out to take a personnel job in Juneau, and so we're back to square one, we're still advertising on the same sites that we advertised the first time around about a month or so ago. The important thing, or the interesting thing with this story, is that there's apparently a race on statewide among all these districts that for some reason, all have superintendent vacancies right now, and apparently a dearth of qualified superintendent candidates. We advertised in 4 or 5 websites. We got 16 finalists. We only like 2 of those, and both of them have taken jobs at other districts.
Some of the people that didn't even make the final list in Haynes have already been hired on elsewhere too.
Yeah, there were. Petersburg, Petersburg hired one that did not make our list of the 2
right.
finalists. Yeah,
out of 17 Southeast superintendent positions, there were 10 open at the same time this spring. I just found out 10.
Yeah.
So,
man, kids, go and get your school superintendent certification. That's the lesson there. Huh?
Yeah. There'll be another dearth of them in about 8 years of job openings in Southeast.
Also, we have a story in this week's paper about heli-ski safety under scrutiny.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of follow up on some, of course, the tragic death of Mr. Caritas, the guide here. The state occupational safety health office is going to have some recommendation out here in the next 6 months. My guess is that they would lean towards some kind of airbag requirement, that the industry itself is going in that direction. I doubt that the industry would oppose that, just for the practical purpose of if they can tell their guides, look, this is state law, you have to put it on. That might actually help the companies. In the recent case of the the SEBA guide who died, according to a company owner, Scott Sundberg, it was company policy at that point for everyone, the guides and the customers to be wearing airbags. And Mr. Caritas had not done that.
Right.
And so perhaps if that's in law, they can say, look, you're breaking the state law if you're not wearing one of these. And kind of a revolutionary change for that industry. But I personally compare it to like car seat belts at one time. For a long time, you could drive a car and that wasn't required. And it's now required because it saves lives.
Right. All right. Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for all that information.
Thanks, Marty.
Checking in. It looks like it's a nice day that your papers will make it to town today.
I know. And I get to kind of play for a few hours.
Thanks. Yes. Go enjoy the sun. Improve your sunny disposition. This morning we have Pam Randles with us from Talk Chinook Watershed Council to tell us about an interesting program happening with some young scientists. Hello, Pam.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Great. We haven't had you on in a while.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I always think of Talk Chinook this time of year, though, when all the birds start coming out, all the animals start emerging. That's kind of what makes
right.
me
it's a really fun time of year.
Yeah. But hey, I got this information from you yesterday, and I thought this was really, really interesting. It has to do with the Haynes School District homeschooling program and some students
right.
in that program that you've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me the overview? I think you can
explain
it better.
Well, it's a collaboration between the Haynes School and, like you say, particularly the homeschool in this case, and the Watershed Council and an organization called Globe. And every fall semester, the Watershed Council and the school collaborate to do an eagle research program. And when the eagles are coming in, you know, for that late salmon run.
Okay.
And we've been doing that research since 2009.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
This particular year, it happened that we've got five middle schoolers, homeschoolers, all, who took the class. I mean, anybody can take it. It's open to anybody, you know. Anyway, so we were doing the research, but because of the highway improvement program
right.
that's going on,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden, DOT and Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife and some private research organizations were very interested in our data.
Oh, wow.
And Fish and Wildlife actually called us and asked us to take some extra data for them about how the eagles use the near highway habitat.
Okay.
So it sort of upped the ante for our research. research.
Yeah.
Then the GLOBE program, that other organization I mentioned, it's a marriage between schools and scientists.
Okay.
And so kids all over the world are collecting data, and it goes to this huge database that anybody can use.
Okay.
But then kids do their own research projects, and once a year, there's a science conference just like you would have with any other scientific organization where kids submit their paper of their original research. And then if that's accepted, then they go make a presentation and do a poster and all that kind of thing. And this year, because it's original research by the kids and it is giving data to decision makers, we thought this was a perfect time to go. And the
wow.
U.S. country coordinator said, yes, this is good. Submit your report, la, la, la.
Wow.
So we're going to try and go to India and
oh
present the research.
Wow. And what kind of, I mean, are the people interested in the research just because of the way it was done or the actual outcome of the research? They're interested in using any of it or just because of the project itself that they were impressed with the way it
was? It's a combination of things. First of all, it's done by kids.
Right.
All of it. And they crunch the data, they draw the conclusions, they collect the data, everything. That's their first priority. The second priority is if it offers data to decision makers that increases the value from their perspective.
Okay.
It doesn't necessarily have to be them, but in this case, it's a local decision maker process with DOT and Fish and Wildlife and those kinds of organizations. But that sort of brings up the value of the research. As far as GLOBE is concerned, if kids are doing original research using GLOBE protocols, that's good enough. But if you can offer data to decision makers, that gives you a little gold star.
Wow. All right. And that's what they did with DOT, basically, in Fish.
Yeah,
Okay. I mean, just briefly, what can you describe some of the findings that the students found?
There's 12 different spots that they go to every Saturday throughout that fall eagle migration, starting the first week of school and going through until Christmas break. And we go count the eagles and watch where they move to and from and how they come in and how the numbers increase and that sort of thing. This year, what we decided to do also was try and figure out if there's a particular habitat they prefer. And that's where Fish and Wildlife contacted us and said, could you separate out the eagles that use the near highway stuff from the eagles that are across the river or far away that wouldn't be impacted by the highway project? So we had all of that. We had the when do they come, and then we had the habitat use, and then we had the near highway habitat use.
Okay.
So that's what we were focusing on this year. And the when they come is long-term data. Different people have been collecting that data for over 30 years. And we're just trying to sort of monitor that. And it that way, the community has the data about the eagles to check on the population, and the kids are doing real science. So it's a nice blend.
Right. Oh, for sure. So are they – okay, so if or when you go to India
– I think it's going to be when.
When, okay. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
They're going to do a presentation there with all of this, and that's how it works. Okay.
The first thing they have to do is submit their report.
Okay.
And in past years, the U.S. GLOBE group has been able to fund U.S. teams, but because of budget cuts and whatnot, they're going to fund 5 teams this year. So if their paper is good enough, then 4 students and 1 teacher will get a free ride.
Wow.
And then we only have to raise money for the other folks, the chaperones and the other students.
Right.
And that would be half of what we have to raise.
Okay.
So we're working really hard on that report, you know.
Right.
We can still go.
You can still
but
go.
We have to pay the whole tab.
Okay.
You know, for 10 people, which is pricey.
Have you priced it out or what
oh,
you
yeah.
need to raise? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's big.
All right.
Yeah.
When do you find out if you get the one?
We submit
the
report by April 21st. Mm-hmm. They will decide by May 16th.
Okay. But are you going ahead with fundraising anyways?
Yes, we are. Because even if we get that, we still have to raise the other half.
Right. Okay.
You know?
So what are you doing for the fundraising?
Give us a whole bunch of stuff because we got to raise a lot of money in a relatively short period of time. So.
Right.
We are the first and foremost thing is that report. The second thing is the kids are putting their name out. They are willing to work. It's springtime. They are willing to help people with spring cleanup, with stacking wood, with walking dogs, mother's helpers, whatever. And so people can call and ask for help. And we've already had a couple of requests.
Oh, great.
And so the stacking wood and walking dogs are the two so far. Then we're also going to be having tables at the Aloha Party that Norm Hughes does. We'll have a table at Mountain Market for raffle tickets because we have a raffle for a cord of wood and or 100 gallons of heating oil.
Okay.
We're going to have a Night in India dinner, which will be all Indian food. We're going to have a Bollywood movie night, and I've previewed the movies. They're awesome. We're going to have a waffle feed after Beer Fest. We're going to have a station at the bike race. A rubber ducky race on the Chilkoot River on July 4th.
Okay.
And a Zoomathon.
Okay. When is the event, actually? When would you actually be going to India?
It's the first week of August.
Okay. So you have
a few we'll be leaving probably August 2nd, which means we're going to miss some of the fair.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, this is really fascinating, really interesting, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it through the summer, especially as you start raising money for it, Pam.
Right, and we started putting flyers out, so we're sort of papering the town at
okay.
the moment.
So if you see them, now you kind of know what it's about. And
right.
we wanted to have one of the students here, or a couple of them, but they
right,
couldn't
but
be
it's all it's testing it's in testing the school, so week. All right. of the kids are in there taking their math right. test today.
Okay.
So they couldn't come.
All right. Well, hey, Pam, thanks a lot. This is really interesting, and I'm glad you were able to come and tell us about
yep.
it.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day. Well, this time of year is a milepost for many events, like the return of sunny days, warmer weather, soon fishing. But for Hainesboro staff, this is budget season. Haines interim manager Julie Causey and staff have been working for several months already on the budget's spending and savings plan, the borough's spending and savings plan for FY15. That's fiscal year 15, so essentially next year. But we have to do it this year. The draft of the budget came out this week. And Mayor Stephanie Scott, and Chief Fiscal Officer Gila Stewart are here today to give us an introduction and overview to the budget for the community. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for being here. I know you're still very busy with this process, but I thought we'd take just about 20 or 25 minutes to kind of go over what has been released this week as far as the budget. I should just make mention, this is a draft. It's considered a draft. It's called the Manager's Budget, and in many ways the process is just beginning for the community because now it goes through about 2 months of process through in front of the assembly and the public. So, but essentially it's our starting point right now. Is that the good way of putting it?
Excellent.
Oh, I think it is. I think it is important to point out, though, that it is very, very important, the manager's budget. There's a lot that goes into it. And the reason I say it's very, very important, in spite of the fact that you are correct, technically it's a draft, but under the charter, if the assembly does not adopt the manager's budget or adopt a budget by June 15th, the manager's budget automatically becomes the budget for the borough.
I didn't realize that. That's a good way, kind of the backup.
Yeah, so it's very, very important.
Right.
And staff takes it very, very seriously, as I know the elected officials do when they review it.
Okay, good to point out. So we can start with whoever. We have the mayor, and I think it's basically Gila and Julie that worked with the department heads the most on this budget. The mayor, you didn't really have much input at this point. I'm not saying you don't have any input. I'm just saying at this point.
Well, I do want to point out that the manager and the CFO did give me a preview, and we walked through a few topics as appropriate prior to the publication of the budget.
Sure.
But I do think you should start with the manager, because this is the manager's budget.
Okay.
No pressure.
I know this was an interesting situation, because you're interim manager.
Yes.
Even though you've worked on budgets in the past, it was kind of your responsibility this year. So, first of all, can you kind of explain, I thought in the introduction, and you mentioned this too early in the year, that you outlined a process for yourself of how you were going to make decisions and what guided you this year in the process. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. It boils down to two words, essentially: comprehensive plan. As you know, the community went through a big process, lengthy process, starting with the Planning Commission and then ultimately with the Assembly adopting the plan that we have. And we can't ignore that. It's a very important document for us, and it should be a guide for the decisions that we make. And certainly that involves decisions we make about spending the public dollars. And so we tried really hard to let that be our guide with the whole management team, what I call all of the department directors, managers. We would get together, and I really encouraged each one to use that as a reference as they were developing the budgets they believed were the best for their departments and for the borough as a whole.
Okay. And I know early on, too, several months ago, you mentioned that you were asking the department heads to do basically a budget that would keep spending about the same, or also look at one that might reduce things, spending as much as 10% in their departments.
That's right.
So what did you kind of end up with? Did you end up somewhere in between those, or just kind of a...
Just flat. Yeah.
It's pretty much the same as, I mean... Can you tell me what the differences, major differences are between last budget and this budget? The spending is about the same, if I read it correctly, about $12 million. Mm-hmm. Okay. There isn't much in personnel changes. There's a few little things. Let me put it this way. I apologize. If you go in for a coffee somewhere today, Julie, and someone asks you, so what's the big news on the budget? What should I care about in the budget, this budget that you've put forward? What would you tell them?
Well,
what's going to be the biggest
difference? I would tell them the thing that I'm most excited about are the staffing structural changes that I'm proposing.
Okay.
Because I think they're going to cause a wonderful improvement in efficiency for staffing. Let's face it. Dollars are shrinking, and I think the public has an expectation that the staff do as much as possible with what they're being paid. And while I believe that that is the case with our employees, I will adamantly go on record that we have dedicated, hardworking borough employees. Still, it's always good to evaluate the way you're doing things, and I'm proposing a different structure because I believe that we have people with various skill sets that can contribute to more than one department, say.
Okay.
And I just think it's a good time to look at combining positions, refocusing people in different directions. And the biggest one is my proposal for a community and economic development director. Mm-hmm. That would oversee the tourism director and that department, as well as Parks and Rec and the pool manager.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about revenues, though. I think there was an expectation, and there has been for a few years now, that a reality that revenues are declining for local governments, especially from the state and federal level. And you made mention of this in your budget, that they were anticipated there would be revenue cuts, but they didn't necessarily materialize as much as maybe we thought they would this year. Why? Can you kind of explain the process around this revenue, trying to estimate what the revenues are and then realizing what they come out to be? And
well, I think that I could bumble through the response to that, but I think the one that's here that could more eloquently explain that is our finance director, Sheila Stewart.
Sheila, can you kind of explain the revenue process here? Basically, the climate around revenues is that people feel like they're declining. There is evidence that they're declining from the state and federal level, but those cuts didn't materialize in this budget. So, I mean, what's going to happen? Do we still have to prepare for that? Why didn't they happen this year? What changed from the expectation to the reality? What's the difference between those two things?
Mm-hmm. Some of the cuts that, in many ways, the expected revenues for FY15 are similar to our actual revenues for FY14. We experienced some cuts in FY14, but to some extent, we've already made adjustments for those, such as supplemental revenue sharing from the state. We lost that in FY14. It's not coming back in FY15. We feared several months ago that we were going to lose the federal PILT, which is in excess of $350,000, but that got reauthorized for an additional year.
That's payment in lieu of taxes for rural communities. Okay.
Yes. And we don't have an appropriation for secure rural schools, which is about $200,000 for FY15, but we're in the same boat that we were a year ago with that. We didn't know if we were going to get another year for FY14, and it did come through for an additional year. Property tax is roughly flat. The assessor's sending out the notices next week. They're up about 2% from the actual last year, although with the Board of Equalization and the appeal process, we don't know that we'll actually realize a 2% increase in the end. Sales tax has been roughly flat. So in many ways, the revenue projections are flat for FY15 from FY14.
Okay.
One difference is it's not an actual revenue, but in the FY15 budget, the manager has recommended transferring the maximum amount from the permanent fund earning reserve, which was sort of an initiative from the assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's acts like an additional revenue to the general fund.
All right.
And then additionally, we're expecting sort of a boom year for raw fish tax in FY15. So the story of revenues in FY15 as different from FY14 is mostly raw fish tax and permanent fund earnings reserve.
But these are one-time things that can't necessarily be counted on long-term. Is that a good way of kind of looking at it? I mean,
well, I don't think we want to think of fishing in Haines and the fishing fleet that way. I think one of the things the manager's done in her budget is to use some of that raw fish tax to make investments in the fishing fleet in Haines. We've, for the first time, as long as I've been here, we've proposed an operating transfer of some of that fish tax to the Harbor Fund to help support the infrastructure and the operations there for the fleet. The manager's proposed an appropriation for some float for Excursion Inlet, which should help to support the fleet. It's true that we don't know what FY16 fish tax revenues will be.
Right. Okay, understood. So one more question before we get to the mayor. She looks excited to talk about this. I have one more question about the other thing that a lot of people like to look at in the budget that directly affects them is the mill rate.
Mm-hmm.
And you've recommended, if I get this correct, keeping it steady for town mm-hmm. site and
yes.
actually reducing it
yes.
area-wide.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go through your decision process on that? I mean, was that because either you had this information that property taxes might assessments have that 2% bump, or is that just because you had the revenues elsewhere that you didn't think we needed to increase the mill rate? I'm just trying to understand.
Well, at least for me, deliberately, I I wanted to make sure that the mill rates either stayed the same or went down. And there's a fascinating, almost formula way to that you can kind of work with numbers to try to help those things happen. And I'll just have to say I've learned so much through this process. It's going to make me a better borough clerk, but I've learned so much from our finance director about government accounting, and there's still a lot I need to understand. And she will probably be able to add more to this whole mill rate thing, but I just really did not want to come out at the end of this with raising mill rates for our taxpayers.
Okay, understood. And the mayor, let's just get, first of all, what was your reaction? I mean, how do you feel about the budget for FY15? Do you have any, you think it's going to basically, I mean, it's hard to predict what the assembly is going to do. I mean, do you think it?
Well, I wanted to, you know, approach the budget as the story that it tells about us. And I'm always looking to our ability to support ourselves with our own revenues. And I note that about we're doing a good job. We really do support ourselves with our property tax, with our sales tax, with our bed tax, with our fisheries tax, and the state revenue sharing and the federal payment in lieu of taxes really only accounts for about in our general fund about 23 maybe a little bit more than that, maybe 33% of our budget.
Mm-hmm.
So those are very politically driven revenue sources. And so those are revenue sources that I've been involved with. The Alaska Municipal League and the National Association of Counties has worked diligently, ferociously, to make sure that the federal government includes that payment in lieu of taxes for rural communities. I've said many times that the 98% of the landmass of the Haines Borough is owned by the state and federal governments. That is a huge impediment to our economic development. And I believe that we are due payment in lieu of taxes. And we're going to have to continue to work at the federal level to make sure that that happens. And so a lot of my time is taken up in that. State revenue sharing is the same. State owns most of the Haines Borough, and so I do believe that they owe us revenue sharing to provide the services that anybody who comes through Haines accesses.
Okay.
So that's another political problem. Right now, the House Finance has voted to remove $10 million from the $60 million in the municipal revenue sharing. That would affect FY15 revenues. And the Senate Finance has put $3 million back into that. The governor wants to keep it at $60 million. You can see how complicated it is and how important it is for us to raise our voice and say, this money is money that we need unless you're going to turn the land in the Haines Borough over to us for our use. So I'm constantly looking at that. And
okay.
It seems to me the other thing that I look at when I look at the budget are what are the major cost drivers?
Right.
It's the same way I look at the state budget. What is driving the cost of the state budget? Well, for the Haines Borough, it's the money we pay our people. And so and that's a very important thing to look at, because the money we pay ourselves to deliver the services is money that stays here in Haines.
Right.
So,
well, that's a good point, because delivering services is what a lot of residents look at when they look at the budget. And so, for instance, last year, I mean, I think more people showed up to the meeting about how the money was going to be awarded or given to nonprofit requests than almost any other part of the budget, right? So, and I think the manager proposes keeping that level of money the same this year. The money, the allocation to the school also remains the same, but do I have it right? A little more given to facilities and maintenance for the school. Okay.
Yes.
I couldn't quite tell with the library. That seemed to maybe be about the same, a little less, but maybe just in very specific ways. So I guess the idea is, how do you think the residents are going to react to the services outlined in the budget and the money allocated for services? Is there ever a point where if residents say they want more services, they want more hours at the pool, they want more hours at the library, they want more money be given to the school, that we do raise mill rates or consider that? Or at what point is that?
Absolutely. That's what would happen. And I wanted to say that the second biggest cost driver is the money we pay for the school, not just for the operation of the school and the maintenance of the buildings, but the money we pay for the bond that built the school. So that's our other, we can't do much about that bond payment. We need to make it every single time. But that's what people have to look at. You know, what level of service do they want? What does the service cost? And I think the manager is always looking, can we deliver the same level of service for less? I think that's probably, the mantra that reverberates throughout the borough administration. How can we do the same for less? So, I appreciate that. In the manager's budget, there is also a line item for money, the appropriation for mental health services.
Yes.
And so that need not go through the application process for the
nonprofits.
For the nonprofits, if the assembly approves that.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. Interesting.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think that's a wise move. It's an essential service. They provide 24/7 coverage. They go out on calls with the police department. It's a real essential linkage for public safety.
And can you or the manager explain briefly, is a process for those nonprofit request going to be the same this year as it was? Basically, we wait until after the budget's approved for that $32,500 to be in that sort of community chest, and then the assembly goes through another process of reviewing applications from nonprofits to award that money.
I believe so. I think that we had a great process last year. It was more objective. It was a little bit new. I think we're going to refine that process, refine the application itself, so that it's more uniform. There may be a different point spread. We're going to make sure that the applicants understand the way we are going to judge the applications, up front. I think Gila has worked with me on that, and, I think it'll be the similar process, as objective as possible.
Okay. Yeah. And just throwing this out there, obviously the manager's made her decision about keeping that level the same as last year. Do you think – and that was actually a number the assembly finally settled on, that $32,500. Mm-hmm. The manager, Mark Ernest, had put it higher, and then the assembly reduced it. Do you think the assembly is going to be amenable to the same amount or more or less, or what, anything people should maybe be expecting on that front?
I think it'll be a discussion. I think it's something that the assembly philosophically thinks deeply about, in terms of that these are nonprofits and this is public money, and they're making a decision about public money. One of the things I want to point out that I found interesting in the manager's budget, there's a line for the Chilkat Valley Preschool, but there isn't any appropriation for the Chilkat Valley Preschool. And I was wondering if that was a signal. Can anybody respond to that?
It's always had its own line item. It's grouped under school. The school is department Fundo 1, Department 12, and the Chilkat Valley Preschool appropriation was always grouped with that. It had its own line item. Mm-hmm. And then last year, the assembly requested that the manager take all of the different appropriations that had their own line items that were in Fundo 1 and group them together so that they could see the total amount that community chest was created. The appropriation to Haynes Friends of Recycling used to be in the household solid waste or hazardous waste and solid waste budget. The appropriation to the Dolphin Swim Team used to be in the CYD budget. The preschool used to have its own line item, but those were all zeroed out last year.
Okay.
So now they're all in that same line. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a reorganization.
So right. All of those nonprofits would be covered by the, if the manager's budget is adopted, by the $32,000 figure, correct? That's mm-hmm. the amount of money that's available to be distributed.
Okay. 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 Let's move on to public facilities, because those are always fun, too. And Ms. Manager makes an interesting, you did something interesting in the budget, I think, insofar as you pointed out that the public facilities building is kind of the building in the borough that has been identified as needing probably the most help or attention as far as either maintenance or
yes.
rebuilding something. And the money isn't necessarily there to do mm-hmm. that. But you suggest expanding the administration building.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit more about that idea, either how you came to it and explain what you're proposing for that?
Well, I came to it primarily as a result of conversations with other staff members. And while I've been in this interim period, the director of public facilities, Carlos, has been stationed in the manager's office, so to speak, and that has been wonderfully efficient. And we've been trying to figure out a way to help that continue, especially since his support person, Krista, and has become the deputy clerk, and that's two of the positions that I've proposed combining.
Oh, right.
And that would certainly be difficult for her to support that office and not have it be in the same building. One of the things is we believe we could do it very inexpensively. The rough estimate is for about $200,000. We could add on a few offices as well as a records room, and then as a phase one, and then eventually even possibly add on a wonderfully new assembly chambers that would be much larger, so we wouldn't deal with the overflow problems we occasionally have, plus nice ADA accessible chambers, and we have lots of land around there, and according to our director of public facilities, that is one of our better buildings, and it just seems to be a good place, a central location near downtown, near this new park. We hope, I don't know, we might call it the mayor's park, but that's a whole new thing that will be nice for the summer flowers, et cetera. But
okay.
It just seems like a good location. The idea of maybe a little government campus that doesn't solve the problem of what to do about public safety,
right.
The fire department, dispatch, police department. There are other ideas kicking around about that. But
okay.
At the very least, I would like the assembly to consider some other options.
And you don't necessarily identify a funding source for this expansion either at this time, right?
No.
Okay.
No, possibly, some design work.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I've put some money in to CIP to do what we're calling spatial modifications.
Oh, okay.
To figure out a way to more efficiently use the admin building. Because let's face it, it's a former library building that we've kind of tried to retrofit into administrative offices, and it's not been exactly ideal, but there are some ideas about how we could improve that
okay.
in the meantime.
Okay. And finally, I wanted to bring up this this idea you also floated at the end of your memo, and maybe you or Gila can talk about the idea of a biannual budget. Neither of you want to talk about it.
Well, that was all me.
That was all you.
Okay. The finance director, I think I've got her a little bit intrigued and interested in
you point out
looking
that
into it.
It's not a new idea. Seward at least
that's
does
right.
it. Yeah, okay.
That's
and what
right.
what do you think would be the benefits of Haynes doing a biannual budget instead of
well,
an annual?
Well, it fascinates me because in going through this whole process, you know, working through the comp plan and just knowing what I know from my 11 years with the borough, strategic planning is so critical, and I think long-range planning, not just looking 1 year ahead and just continually just focusing on 1 year. I think if there's some way that we can revise our budgeting process so that we can incorporate an additional year in some way, I'm intrigued by that. And I think it's worth at least looking into to see if it's something that might work for the Haynesboro.
Okay.
So we're not always just kind of reacting to what's happening. And I know there's always going to be a certain portion of that because the state budget is an annual one and the federal government. But possibly there are ways that we can look ahead.
Okay, understood. Mayor,
Stephanie? I just want to point out that our capital improvements budget, it doesn't lapse. And so that is a vehicle that we can use to look ahead. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look through that budget, you can see, you know, projects that have been planned a long time ago that we are chipping away at. So yeah. I do think we have an element of farsightedness in our budget.
Yes, we do.
In
an
our
element.
Budget.
An element.
Well, now the budget is brought to the Assembly starting next Tuesday, I believe, April 8th. And
yeah.
I guess, Mayor, I'm curious what you think how this – first of all, if I understand correctly, I'm not sure that necessarily people not on the Assembly really care about this part, but the Assembly is going to take a different approach to looking at the budget. Mm-hmm. They're going to do it by fund instead of department. I don't know if that means anything for – you know, residents, but do you think that's going to be a better or more efficient way of the Assembly dealing with the...
Well, I think that it's very important to understand that we have an area-wide fund. We have a set of services that are delivered area-wide, and we all pay for those.
Mm-hmm.
So that is our biggest fund and our biggest, and it includes our largest expenses. And I think that will be helpful to solidify that understanding. And that's where your area-wide mill rate comes from. And so I think that'll be helpful. But on April 8th, we're going to start with an overview. And
okay.
It's a 45-minute session, and the chief financial officer is going to present an overview. And I recommend that everybody try to come to that. I think it starts at 5:30. So the meeting itself starts at 6:30. So it's not going to be a long presentation, and I think it would really be helpful.
Okay.
So
I should point out the new manager, Dave.
Yes,
so that'll
right.
be his first.
That's
it will.
Right.
Julie's very excited about that. I guess I should ask. I know he hasn't been on staff yet, but if I remember correctly, you've kind of kept him informed as this process goes along, because he will be the new manager.
Yes, and he will.
Okay. Has he had any input or just kind of been following the process along? And
he's been following, but I've also really worked hard to try to keep him informed.
Mm-hmm.
And he has received a copy, an electronic copy of the budget, and he's on the ferry, I believe.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I'm not sure what time the ferry
right.
leaves Bellingham, but I think he's on the ferry.
He's on his way.
Is studying the budget, no doubt.
Yes, probably.
Yeah. He has 3 days to go on the ferry. And then his first day is April 8th, right? Is
correct.
That
yes,
about?
Correct.
Okay.
It is.
And okay. Well, anything else we need to make? I mean, I think you're right. Tuesday would be a great introduction for anybody who wants to follow the budget process.
Well, you didn't mention a revenue source that's included in the budget that we're going to have to process, and that's the E911 surcharge. I think it's a $27,000. Source of revenue that hasn't been established
that's
yet.
That's correct.
It would have to be through ordinance,
yes,
et cetera, et cetera.
You're right. Okay, so that would be a new revenue. Oh, all right, because right now we don't have that surcharge, but it could be added.
Correct.
I remember the Assembly talking about this.
Well,
okay.
Correct. And so the one way to look at it is it's a $27,000 revenue source to defray the cost of the new E911 system. And so if the Assembly decides not to go that direction, they really need to find $27,000 or $30,000 elsewhere to pay for that service. And it's in the general fund, area-wide general fund, because it provides dispatch area-wide.
Okay.
You know, so it'll be a discussion.
Okay.
Is that ordinance going to be introduced?
I don't believe I saw it on this agenda, but I would imagine the next meeting.
It would have to flow in concert with the adoption of the budget.
The adoption of the budget. Okay. Mm-hmm. Understood. Gila, did you have any parting words about this year's budget?
FY15, I should say. No. Okay. Just, I appreciate you being here. I know it was still a very busy week, and it is online now for everybody. You can go on there and look. There's several documents, if I remember. One is your sort of introduction to it, which is a really great way to look at it, overview first, and then it's fund by fund, and then some other memos and things like that. So if nothing else?
I think we're done.
We're done.
Okay.
Okay. Come Tuesday, get the overview of the budget for yourself, and thank you to my guests for helping. Come give us an introduction and explanation right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, well, we're back for just a few more minutes of Talk Around Town this morning. It's 10:56 on a sunny Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us. We don't have a My Name Is feature this morning, but I did have some other information I wanted to bring to you, mostly about KH&S. First of all, in case you didn't know, and in case you didn't take part, and if you did take part in our survey recently, to get an updated sense of what listeners want from KH&S, we conducted a survey February 18th through March 3rd. We had 22 community members respond to the survey. We had it online as well as some locations on the street, so we were trying to get as many people's input as possible. Participants were both non-members and members of KH&S. They all had different concerns and praise for our current programming, but we also found many areas of common ground, and that is where we concentrated our focus from the survey. All of those results are now online. So if you go to khns.org and you scroll down the homepage just a little bit, you can see the results of the survey. We have all the demographics of it, some of the great comments we got, some of the great responses, some of the rankings we received for different types of programming and services that are most important to people. So we're not making any huge changes just yet because of that survey, but we are having some changes come up, and one of them is in the news department. So as news director, I'm happy to tell you that starting Monday, we are changing up our news hours in the evening. At 5 p.m., you will now hear NPR's evening news program, All Things Considered, which is what you hear now from 6 to 7, but now you're going to be hearing it from 5 to 6, and it will be live. And then that means KH&S local news will air at 6. That's about a half hour later than you're used to, but it'll be straight at the top of the hour. And directly following that, we'll have the BBC headlines, Writer's Almanac, National Native News, and close out those two news hours with Alaska News Nightly starting at 6:30. So that's the new schedule. It's going to take some getting used to, but I think you'll really enjoy it. There's a lot of reasons why we did it, and I think it'll be easier and provide a lot of good information for people in a different structure. If you have any questions or concerns about that, just give us a call at the station. You can contact me, the news director, at news@khns.org. I'm also at extension 2 when you call the station. That's about the only major change we have coming up right now. We are hiring a part-time news assistant to help in our news department too. Bring you some more news assistance and more news content. Anyways, that's it for Talk Around Town today. What do we have coming up next? Oh, we have the world. That's right. That's our show for today, and I want to thank our guests this morning, Tom Morfitt from Chilkat Valley News, Pam Randles with Talk Chinook, Julie Causey, Stephanie Scott, and Gila Stewart with the Borough, giving us an overview of the Borough budget. And you can go online to the Haynesboro website to look at that right now. Deborah Schnabel will be back with us on our next show, April 17th. Thanks so much for joining us. You can also listen to Talk Around Town online. We post the shows on there, usually within a couple hours after we get off the air. So look for that later today online at khns.org. Thanks for joining us. Have a wonderful sunny Thursday. You're listening to KHNS Haynes, Skagway, and Klukwan.